Poya.
This is Robbie.
Welcome to Uncharted.
And thanks for joining us again.
This week's episode is brought to you by Oracle NetSuite. Oracle NetSuite, I think, solves a really important problem that a lot of startups, business owners, executives face, which is how do you get the information that you need instantly all in one place? Before we upgraded to Oracle NetSuite at my last startup, it used to take us a lot of time to pull the information reports that we needed for our quarterly investment meeting or the report that we wanted to send to both internal employees as well as stakeholders and shareholders at the end of the month. Upgrade to Oracle NetSuite today so you can get the visibility and control you need over your financials, HR, inventory, and everything you need in one place that you can access instantly. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/scale. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/scale. That is netsuite.com/scale. Sherilyn, thanks so much for joining the podcast. We'd love to kick it off with a quick intro about yourself, both the professional as well as the upbringing personal side. So how did we get to where we are today?
All right. Well, I was born March 19th, 1982.
Wow. Birthday's coming up.
Birthday is wow. Friday. The big 3-9. I'm ready. Another birthday in quarantine. I'll be one of the few unfortunates that has that, but no, looking forward to turning 39. Bay Area born and raised. I grew up in San Rafael. I went to high school in San Francisco, St. Ignatius, Wildcats, class of 2000, and graduated from Berkeley in 2004. I just can't leave the Bay Area. It's my home. I love it.
The bubble. We love the bubble.
You know, after school, I majored in American studies with an emphasis in popular culture. At that time, I had no idea what I wanted to do with that. But I did find myself with a career in television. I got my first job inputting ads at KRON TV, Channel 4. And, you know, with the dream of being on stage and being a journalist, that was not the case. And I learned that pretty quickly, but it did give me sort of the introduction into sales and into sort of the world of revenue, which was exciting. Fast forward a couple years, a friend of mine was doing some consulting work for this company called Salesforce.com. Thing called the cloud and SaaS technologies was a shiny object, very exciting. And they were hiring for entry-level sales roles. And so I took a job as a BDR. 2007, February. Little did I know what a world I was about to walk into. And it was the best step that I could have ever taken. And I'm so grateful that one, I had the opportunity to interview for that role, that I got the job, and that I was able to spend 7 years at such a wonderful organization with the best in the best.
What a journey Salesforce must have been back in the day. But after a 7-year run at Salesforce, the last 10 years or so, you've been spending in early stage startups from a perspective of a marketer. And I'd love to know from your perspective over the last 10 years, what are some things that you've learned that you're going to take into this new role and new opportunity, which congrats, by the way, at Honeycomb as their VP of Revenue and Marketing. Like, what's that framework that you're going to use given your 10-year plus experience as a marketer?
As a marketer, you can work on a million things, and scale has nothing to do with quantity. I think if there was one takeaway that I want the audience to bring home from this conversation is that scale has nothing to do about quantity or how many campaigns you execute, or, you know, it's about working on a plan, not working towards a plan, and following a sequence of events that's the right order to get you to where you need to go. And that is where growth, right? Revenue. I've said this before, I've heard this before, and I just want to debunk it right now. Let's build the plane as we fly it, right? You know, early stage companies, like, yes, velocity is important. You need to get things in motion, but the concept of building the plane as you fly it, you're not going to get too far, right? For a growth engine to be successful and scalable, you need to create the biggest trusted beast in the sky. And so when I talk about sort of the tactics that I follow, right, it's simple, but it's like the uncuttables, right? And I take that phrase from actually another podcast, the Demand Gen Visionaries, by the guys at Qualified. They talk about a concept of uncuttables in terms of what you can't cut from your budget. And you know, I apply that to sort of like what you can't cut in terms of the sequence to drive growth at an organization. So, you know, thinking about how that plays into sort of my world today, the first thing that you need to focus on, and this is regardless if you're bottoms up, tops down, trying to go from 0 to 5 million or 50 million to 500 million, right? You got to start with your plumbing, right? The back end mechanics, your tech stack, right? The first hire I would make if I was starting a company and I was a team of one, revenue operations. Absolutely, without a doubt. Revenue operations. You need to have a stack that supports the business, not that you have today, but the business that you're building for. And I think that that's something that is not taken into an account, and companies find themselves in a world of mess. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I agree. I think if there's one alignment I'm hearing more and more between sales and marketing, it's the need for a really good operations person on the revenue side. It's like, okay, we start there, let's align there and then go. So where do we go from there? We hire the superstar revenue ops person.
Yep. Yep.
And for those listening, go back to a session we did with Rhonda Larson, who runs sales ops at companies like Snowflake, LinkedIn. If you want to kind of listen what a good RevOps person is, I would put that on your radar. But where do we go after that, Sharon?
Yep. Yeah, Band-Aids don't work on revenue operations. I'll just leave it at that. I know that's a bold statement. Second, you got to have your product market fit, right? When your product satisfies, it catapults your market demand, right? And so being different is awesome, but you have to be really different, right? You have to find that product market fit that is history making outcomes, not just like, oh, like somebody likes it and maybe you're going to buy it. Like nothing too fluffy. Like you need to have a product market fit that your leadership is aligned on, your customers are aligned on, right? People want to sing from the mountaintops how great your product is.
I got to ask you, one of the unique experiences you have is going for industries or organizations where they have product market fit, and there's a lot of players in that space. Mm-hmm. So how does differentiating come in to play? Like, how is that factor of like, what makes this company different? Like, where does that come in?
Absolutely. So positioning is sort of third on my list. So great lead in there, Poya. So product market fit, revenue operations, right, and your plumbing. Third is in terms of the sequence to scalable growth is positioning. You have your dream product market fit. If you don't have your supporting narrative, like you may as well not have a fit at all. And creating that narrative is a discipline that is incredibly difficult. I have the utmost respect for anybody in product marketing. I think that is the hardest job in marketing by far, to be able to combine a solution and a honest story that is authentic. Whenever I see sort of product marketers in motion, I am just in complete awe. And so the way that they create message maps on both sort of the company level and then on the feature level, it's they get into the weeds of not only your product, but your customers and your competition. They're able to create these positioning documents that basically become your demand gen, your revenue gold. You cannot have strong demand gen if you do not have strong product marketing. And that's why this is sort of the third on my list of the must-haves and in the right order. You cannot start creating programs to, you know, ads and webinars without that positioning framework, because one, you're probably not going to be aligned with your product. And two, you may not be consistent. And consistency matters more than anything, right? Dave Gerhart, CMO at Privy, former CMO at Drift, right? He put out a post, gosh, this must have been 6 or 8 months ago. Dave, you can reach out if I'm off on my timeline here, but he basically said like the days of modern marketing have changed. Like people don't see an ad and they go to your website and they buy anymore. Like maybe on the consumer side, but from the B2B side, it's so much more than that. Right? It's about gaining trust. It's about maybe seeing an ad, forgetting about it, maybe seeing a retargeting ad, coming back, like go to G2, like read a peer review, like go to the community, go back to your website, maybe sign up for a webinar, right? Then get attached to the email list and then maybe start a trial. So there's so many more touch points. And so if your messaging, again, going back to that positioning, is not consistent, you're going to lose somebody on that journey.
I think this is where sales and marketing and other teams come together, right? Like it's more of an education. I think more B2B buyers want, yes, trust is half of it, but they want to make sure they're making the right decision, right? And the more you can de-risk it and explain why you're de-risking it, it's the way to go. So we've covered so far, right? You need a RevOps person. You got to have the good product market fit. You better have a good product marketer or your team to come up with the positioning, right? You got to have the programs that kind of educate and build trust and de-risk it for the client. What happens after that? What else is important that we're missing out on?
You need an ecosystem of partners, and not the traditional ecosystem of partners, right? I'm going to break this out in sort of threefold. One, you need your solutions ecosystem. And so let me talk to you a little bit about this, and I'll use the Chartio example because I think this is really relevant. So Chartio was the BI layer in creating a modern data stack. So if you're an organization, small business or large enterprise organization, and you want to be an informed business, you need to create what we call the modern data stack. And there's tons of writing and content around this. So if you Google it, you'll be inundated with a ton of information. And there were other solutions that made up that modern data stack. So you had your ETL players like Talon and Fivetran and Panoply and Xplenty. You had sort of your BI layer like Chartio or Looker or Tableau. You had your modeling layer like DBT. You had your warehouses like Snowflake or AWS. And so for a company to grow and scale sort of their modern data strategy, it wasn't just about one piece. It was about creating that ecosystem. And so from a demand gen and growth perspective, we would do activities and these integrated campaigns with these partners so that we weren't leading with a feature function sell, we were leading with a solution. Right. And, you know, yes, would these organizations have to buy multiple pieces of technology? Yes. But the end goal that they would be able to hit was well worth it. And so that's what we focused on. So that's sort of one piece of the partnership pie. The second is your customers, right? Traditional marketing, right? 101, like you can't have demand, you can't have growth if you don't have great customers. And I'm not talking about like the standard customer testimonials, like your pain, your challenge, right? So, you know, you bought some technology and they provide you a solution and like, here's your outcome, like authentic, real stories. Coda does a phenomenal job of this, right? Like hats off to them. They've got an article about how Figma uses Coda to ship product. And it's just written so beautifully. It's just honest. It's the real, right? That's how I sort of describe it. But then their demand gen team uses it as a sponsored post on LinkedIn targeting sort of their ICP, right? And so you can take a great story, but you can use it to create growth and drive demand. And so that's sort of the second piece of the partnerships. And then your third, and I'll cover this briefly, but it's influencers. Like we talk about influencer marketing, but like, what is an influencer? Like Poyo, like, what do you think an influencer is?
I'll answer that in a second. But before I do, I have to give a shout out to our sponsor, Indeed. If you're using anything other than Indeed for your hiring, you're wasting your time. You can get the best offer that they have on the internet right now by going to indeed.com/scale. Get started right now with a free $75 credit to upgrade your job post at indeed.com/scale. That is indeed.com/scale. Offer is valid through March 31st. Terms and conditions apply, and allow Indeed to help you find your quality candidates instantly.
The way I look at influencer is somebody that has not authority, but has impact with their actions or words or when they push something, right? Yep. It's true for B2B, it's true for B2C, and I've seen it time after time, right?
Yep.
Somebody that, I hate using the word thought leader, but somebody that definitely has an impact when they speak.
Yep. And they're not saying talk to sales. They're just being authentic with how they talk about your product. And usually they're pretty agnostic in how they think and how they describe and storytell, but aligning yourselves with some great thought leaders, they may not even be the ones that are the obvious ones. And so I would encourage anybody on the growth side to just do some research, like who's writing about this topic. It might surprise you to find people who have a killer following that aren't necessarily like the famous influencers. So that sort of rounds out the partnership piece. So I know we're covering a lot here.
How how often, because partnerships usually is more aligned with sales, right? Like usually they fall under the revenue team. Like where does marketing's role impact into partnerships?
So in my last roles, specifically with Chartio and Nitro, like partnerships were in our wing, and not exclusively. And I want to be, you know, crystal clear on how I say that, right? It is a team effort in how you work with these partners in conjunction with your sales team. And right, I've had great relationships with the sales leaders I've had the pleasure of working with. I think, you know, there's obviously the stigma, you know, sales versus marketing, but, you know, you're all working towards the same goal. And so as you're building out your growth plans, partners will have a place in that plan, right? When we talk about the solution story versus the feature function, and just, it's important again, and this goes into sort of my next sort of P on my list, right? I call it sort of the rise of the eight, right? Moving from sort of the traditional five P's of marketing into this sort of new realm of eight, is around priorities. And it's important, and this is more from an internal lesson, to make sure that everybody on your leadership team and the key stakeholders in your organization understand the priorities that you need to be driving from a demand gen and growth perspective. And so if partnerships and that ecosystem is part of your solution and part of your plans to be able to deliver on a revenue number, then there's your alignment right there.
Perfect. And yep. So when it comes to priorities, since it sounds like that's a newish lesson or learning or thing that you're kind of putting or adding to the P's, right? What is the most important thing to consider when you're like, as part of your experience that you've learned, like what's the most important thing to keep in mind when you're implementing this? Like you brought up OKRs, right? So that's definitely one way, but like, outside of that, like as you're trying to roll this out to the team, like what's really, really important to make sure everybody's aligned on priorities? Because that's like, in theory, it sounds great, but in practice, that's really, really tough, especially when you have a big org, to get everybody aligned on like and focused. So what have you learned to help you?
So I'm you know, very disciplined around OKRs and I'm an adamant user of Airtable. And so this is, again, getting very much into the tactics and the weeds, but, you know, at Chartio, we all had an Airtable for our key business units. And we would create our, you know, our key results based on our objectives, right? And our objectives were aligned with the company objectives. And then we'd outline our key milestones. And we do this as an exercise, and being remote, right? You don't have like the opportunity to do this on a whiteboard. But what I did was, you know, we'd create these big sky thinking sessions, and I'd create like a Miro board online, and we would just talk about all the things that we'd want to do, right? And we'd get sales involved, we'd get CS involved. And so this wasn't just a revenue operations, or, you know, sorry, this wasn't just a revenue marketing tactic, right? This was a revenue team tactic, and sales and CS, right? It's the customer machine. So we would put together, you know, slap everything on this board of things that we would want to do, and we'd narrow it down based on, you know, the most impact and opportunities that we would have. And then we'd build that into Airtable. And, you know, my one-on-ones, we'd, you know, go through them on a monthly basis. And then as a team, we would also talk about them on a monthly basis. So there's an opportunity to have sort of the one-on-one conversations about, you know, where we feel like we're winning, where we feel like we're falling behind, and then we talk about it on the team level. And so, yes, again, huge fan of Airtable. It's how I help manage those priorities and help keep sort of the team marching to the same beat of those priorities and get people involved, right?
And when it comes to tracking, to make sure, like, look, at the beginning, you just want to track and see how you're adjusting week by week, month by month, so on and so forth. But what have you learned to be really, really important when it comes to tracking how you're doing, or whether it's good or bad?
Well, that leads me to sort of the last P on the new eight, as I call it, performance, right? Again, marketing, you can measure everything 10 ways, 7 ways, right? I mean, it's crazy. And you can find yourself in data paralysis, absolutely. And so how I approach this is, you have your North Star metrics, right? Your primary metrics that you need to be tracking. And that's revenue, right? That's your North Star metric as a growth marketer, is you own a revenue number. You don't just own a pipeline number. You own a revenue number. And so you have to back into that in terms of the funnel. And so, you know, people look at the funnel and they look top down. I actually look bottoms up. And I think about, all right, if I have to deliver on this revenue number, right, let's go back. Okay, well, that means I need, you know, based on our conversion rate from SA, you know, SQL or, you know, sales accepted opportunity, SAO, whatever sort of that metric is, you know, what's the conversion rate to win? So I need to know how many SAOs I have to deliver. And then backing up from that, it's how many SQLs do I need to deliver based on our current conversion rates? And right, and you can have two funnels. So for example, you can have your product-led sort of self-service funnel, and you can have your sales-led funnel, and they're different. And so you have to break them out differently and measure those conversion points very accurately to better understand what you need to be doing from a top of funnel perspective, right? And that just opens the door to even more metrics, right?
Metrics upon metrics. This is, Jason Lumpkin actually wrote about this and brought it up during our meeting today, which is, the importance of like ensuring whatever that metric is that sales, CEO, and your marketing team like align on. Yep. Like no matter what, like you can have 10 things to track, but like there's one metric you need everybody like to perform against, right? From your experience, what do you think that metric should be?
I mean, like I said, it's revenue. it's revenue, but the most important sort of takeaway I would leave, you know, to add on to that is you have to agree on how that metric is being captured, right? What's the definition of that metric? Far too often, you know, somebody in sales might think an SAL is different than what a marketer may think it is. And so, you know, the first step that I will take and, you know, as I embark on my next chapter in my career is ensuring one that our funnel metrics are organized and that we are all aligned on the definition of those metrics. Because, you know, if you're not aligned on the definition of metrics, you're going to have conflict, right? And so sort of setting that stage and gaining that alignment at the beginning of sort of this next growth phase is so key. And again, that goes back to the importance of revenue operations, right? You need to be able to ensure that you're using a tool to be able to capture all of those metrics and blend that data so that you can have full visibility on a dashboard. To again, scale smart. I mean, you can find yourself, I mean, gosh, a couple years ago, I was hours deep in Excel spreadsheets trying to pull this stuff together. But now you've got technology to be able to help you do it and read it fast.
Yeah, so we're gonna recap the P's with Poya, okay? And you can test me on this.
P's with Poya, I love that.
The number one, get your plumbing in place and you need a RevOps person to help you out with that. Number two is your product market fit has to be checked, right? And even if it's checked, you gotta come up with the positioning to differentiate yourself, tell your story, right? You need programs. Hopefully you can run those programs successfully. But if you have an ecosystem with partners that align your community and solutions, it makes it that much easier, right? And most importantly, the two things we've learned and we're adding is prioritize, 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 and you better be tracking that performance. Am I correct?
Couldn't have said it better myself.
We talked about the fact that there were 8 P's. We've covered 7 P's. So what's the last P, Sheridan?
All right, drum roll, please. Well, you know, if we think about sort of where we started, right, we discussed moving away from the things, right? And if you think about the original 5 P's, it was things that you had to have, right? Tactical things that you had to have in your tool belt to be successful in terms of driving growth. But what we've been talking about today is this new philosophy, right? This new sequence of events that allow marketers to follow a pattern towards da 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 da, right? Predictable revenue, right? And that's sort of what I think is the final P, right? The state of nirvana that every growth marketer wants to find themselves in, to the point where they've developed this strategy, they followed this right sequence, they have the right tactics and the tested channels to which invest, but now they have predictable revenue.
And as we know, both investors, CEOs, everybody loves predictable revenue, right? Because it gives you a nice little framework of being consistent time after time, right? Absolutely. And in the long run, it just makes it easier to forecast, which investors love, but it just adds a little more science versus shooting from the hip that a lot of folks like to do. So,
absolutely. I would add two more to that, right? It you know, like you said, you create a framework, right? It makes it easier to forecast. And for marketers, it helps you really invest in the channels that are working. right? With all of those things that you just put together in the order of the right sequence and that you're able to measure. And it allows you to be in a position to take smarter risks, right? As marketers, you know, it's important for us today to be able to blend traditional tactics, right? The original five, right? With some new frameworks, right? This new methodology or philosophy, however you want to sort of spin it. And it allows you to take smarter, more creative risks that really help elevate your brand, right? So I think we may have just found another topic for another podcast in terms of how does growth impact the development of brand, but I'll leave it at that. And you know, just to summarize, I think again, it's not about what things you can do as a marketer. It's about what sequence of events do you need to follow to drive smart scalability. And like I said earlier, right, it's scale has nothing to do with speed. So I hope that all this comes together and people are excited about some of these new things that we talked about today.
In talking about going slow and building out your sequence and the fact that scalable growth has nothing to do with speed, the same goes with making sure you take a step back and put in the right systems so you can be more productive, scalable, and save costs. And that is why I'm proud to have NetSuite sponsor this week's episode. And in working with them, I wanted to share a quick story about how they have helped us at my last company. The company was called AutoMile. And one of the challenges we had at AutoMile is we had a lot of different solutions for different parts of the business telling us different things. For example, we had Gusto for HR. We had QuickBooks telling us what the metrics were when it came to finance. We had Marketo telling us what was going on with our marketing. Our homegrown CRM solution was telling us what we're doing in terms of sales. And the issue with all of this was there was no... it was all disjointed. So it was very, very difficult for us to have a really holistic viewpoint of what was going on from the time a customer came inbound until they became a long-term customer and how did they pay us. And the challenge there, when an investor comes to you and says, hey, where are your long-term customers coming from? And like, what makes them unique? The things that Sheridan talks about in this episode around predictable revenue, we couldn't do because we weren't organized and it made it really, really difficult for us to even answer the most basic questions to our investors. So if you're going through something similar, don't worry, don't make the mistakes we did, and you gotta go to NetSuite because they can do everything we've talked about all in one system. That includes your HR, your finances, your CRM, and they are the best business management software out there in the marketplace today. I would encourage you to go check out netsuite.com and you can go get a product demo at netsuite.com/scale. You can learn how they can do that for your business at netsuite.com/scale.
Sheridan, this has been absolutely great. We're going to put your contact info and whatnot in the show notes. So if people want to connect with you, they can. But if the wiser Sheridan, now that she's done a bunch of startups, post Salesforce, post Berkeley, would go back and like give one advice to her younger self on this topic, what would that be? What's the biggest learning?
Gosh, I think the biggest learning for me, you know, telling more seasoned marketer to younger marketer something is at some point in your career, the metrics are not going to go your way, right? Things are going to happen, right? And you're going to get an email, right? Or you're going to get a call and somebody's going to ask why, right? Don't get defensive. Don't give an excuse. First thing that you do, acknowledge it. Yes, I understand that we missed our revenue target. We missed our MQL goal, right? Offer a solution. Executives want to hear two things. They want to hear that you've acknowledged the problem and they want to hear how you're going to fix it. So I think that is one of the biggest pieces of advice that I would tell my younger self is, you know, you get these, you know, oh gosh, I missed my number. Like, what am I going to do? I'm like drafting a really long email. It's like, no, executives, they want to know two things. Are you acknowledging it? And what's your plan to fix it?
Well said. I really enjoy going through the 8 P's of marketing with you, Sheridan. Can't thank you enough for jumping on the show. Appreciate the additional context, the wisdom, as well as actionable insights, as well as some of the stories that you shared with us today. For anybody listening, if you want to connect with Sheridan, I would encourage you to do so. Her contact information will be in the show notes, or you can find it on unchartedpodcast.com/episode. Please give us a 5-star review if you're tuning in. And with all of that said, thank you again, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
This week's episode is brought to you by Oracle NetSuite. Oracle NetSuite, I think, solves a really important problem that a lot of startups, business owners, executives face, which is how do you get the information that you need instantly all in one place? Before we upgraded to Oracle NetSuite at my last startup, it used to take us a lot of time to pull the information reports that we needed for our quarterly investment meeting, or the report that we wanted to send to both internal employees as well as stakeholders and shareholders at the end of the month. Upgrade to Oracle NetSuite today so you can get the visibility and control you need over your financials, HR, inventory, and everything you need in one place that you can access instantly. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/scale. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/scale. That is netsuite.com/scale.